You just live on the road to somewhere else. The unflinching assessment bothered Grace, but before she could work out why, Annabel flung herself into a chair, saying, "So, what excitement have you got planned for us today, then?" "Well, I thought we could take a look in the attic." Annabel didn't make any attempt to hide the roll of her eyes. "It has to be done sometime," Grace persisted. She recalled the police checking the attic after Adam had vanished, and one of them shouting down, "Just boxes." Now she wanted to know what was in them. "But," she said to placate her sister, "after that's done, we could go for a walk." At this, Annabel threw back her head dramatically, sighing at the ceiling. "Or not," Grace continued dryly. "Whatever, we'll have to be back in time for lunch at Meredith's. And tonight we could walk down to the local pub."
"That sounds more like it,"
Annabel said eagerly.
"What do we do with Millie, though?"
"We'll take her with us. If I get her ready for bed, then she'll sleep in her stroller. It's only a short walk from here."
"I didn't notice a pub when I drove in."
"Then you didn't look hard enough," Grace replied. "Anyway, come on through here, have some breakfast, and then we'll make a start on the attic." Annabel followed Grace into the kitchen, where Millie was smearing food over the tray of her high chair.
"Morning, Millie,"
Annabel said, ruffling her niece's hair gently. Millie's head swung up in alarm. Then she looked at Grace, her face beginning to crumple. Grace was astonished, as Millie usually loved her Auntie Annabel. However, after a reassuring glance from her mother, Millie forgot her fears, snatched up her spoon, and began her favourite pastime of beating her breakfast into submission. Annabel stared long and hard at Millie, then at Grace. As her mouth opened, Grace held up her hands. "I know what you're going to say. She is a serious little thing. I'm working on it." She tried to sound as casual as she could, even though Millie's somber little face regularly plagued her thoughts. She had begun to observe other children of a similar age, and those kids always appeared to be babbling and laughing, or, if upset, they were more animated about it. They seemed to demand that the world bowed before them, whereas Millie was often troubled by anything new. Strangers, places, toys, you name it. Grace's mother had reassured her that it was probably a phase, but despite this, Grace had noticed her mother talking to Millie with extra care and precision, watching as the little girl played quietly, and she knew her mother was questioning her own diagnosis. And Grace couldn't help but wonder if Millie's nervousness might be related to her daddy's disappearance. What had Millie seen? Again, her mother had consoled her. "She was only a few weeks old. She'd hardly be aware of it." Grace prayed she was right.
"Hey, daydreamer,"
Annabel said, bringing Grace back to the room.
"I wasn't going to say that, actually. I was going to ask if she ever eats anything. Every time I see her, there's food in front of her that's going anywhere but her mouth."
Grace smiled as she handed a plate of toast to Annabel, then gently took the spoon from Millie, dipped it in the Weetabix, and pushed a dollop into Millie's mouth before she could object. Millie looked taken aback and duly swallowed it, then opened her mouth for more. "She's not great at feeding herself yet," Grace explained, taking a seat at the table and continuing to offer cereal to Millie. Annabel studied Millie for a moment, then cast a long, appraising look in Grace's direction.
"I can't believe you live here," she said, gesturing around her. "It's so..."
Grace watched her search for the right words.
"Not you."
Grace smiled, remembering the enthusiasm with which she'd decorated the London flat she'd shared with Adam, keeping most of the walls neutral and applying careful splashes of colour to each room. Now, looking at the intricate floral patterns of the faded wallpaper and carpet and the mismatched furniture, she had to agree with Annabel.
"Well, this place will be having a makeover soon enough,"
she replied. I've got someone coming around tomorrow to give me a quote on renovations. She began to explain what she was hoping to do with the cottage, but could tell that Annabel was only half listening. Am I boring you? She asked after a while.
Sorry, no, Annabel replied. I was thinking about work. It's been manic lately. It's good to get away, even if it's only for the weekend. I love it, but sometimes I wonder what the hell I'm doing. I can't wait for Christmas. I haven't had a week off in a year.
That's what you get for being a high-living cutthroat journalist, Grace said, rising from her seat and collecting their plates. She had a flashback to her own former busy life, how purposefully she'd marched through the tube tunnels every day, clutching styrofoam cups of coffee. Her lunchtimes a breathless assortment of exercise classes, then the rush to get across town to meet friends for dinner. Always somewhere new to try. The days seemed to stretch ahead of her now, endless tracts of time.
Well, actually, I'm applying for a change, Annabel announced, hoping to move into features soon instead of news. Slightly less pressured, though not much.
Before Grace could reply, the grandfather clock began to chime.
Bloody hell! Annabel pressed a hand to her chest. That thing keeps making me jump. Can you stop it?
I don't know. Grace walked into the hallway and stood for a moment, watching the pendulum on its steady arc from side to side. There was something intimidating about this imposing piece of furniture. It stood taller than Grace, looming over her as though on the verge of toppling, while the incessant movement deep in its interior belied the stillness surrounding it. She grabbed hold of the side panels to test its stability, but it was too heavy to move. As Annabel joined her, she twisted the key on the casing, and it swung open. They had a brief look inside. I don't really want to touch it too much in case I damage it. Adam thought it might be worth something, but I think it should stop itself in a few days. It needs winding every week. Meredith must have kept it going while I was gone.
It does look old.
Annabel ran her fingers along the heavy oak casing.
Are those pictures of places round here?
Grace followed Annabel's gaze towards the clock face. The circle of Roman numerals was set into a wider square, and the space in each corner had been filled by pastel paintings of rustic scenes. A bridge, a lake, a barn, and a stream. No idea, Grace said. It was the first time she'd paid proper attention to the motifs. There was a small figure on the bridge, looking over the side into unseen water, the face indiscernible. As she regarded the pictures, she shivered. I'll get it valued and shipped off in the new year, she told Annabel, turning away. After breakfast, they settled Millie into her high chair on the landing, where she could safely view proceedings. Then, as Annabel looked on, Grace lugged the stepladder through the cottage and up the stairs. She folded it open, squeezing it into the small landing space, then took the steps slowly until she could push up the attic cover. Another dark space. She shone her flashlight around, a little wary of what might be revealed. However, as her eyes followed the hazy cylinder of light, her anxiety turned to weary realization. So many boxes. So much work. She gave up counting at a dozen, directing the flashlight into each corner, dust motes dancing wildly as she breathed in the stale, musty air. She climbed back down. I'll have to get up there properly. She quickly tied back her hair.
I'll hold the ladder steady, Annabel said, as Grace began her ascent.
When Grace reached the top, she put her hands on the bare boards, pushed hard, and managed to pull herself into the space. Annabel handed up a large lamp attached to an extension cord, and Grace set it down beside her.
Look out for spiders, Annabel called.
Yeah, thanks for that, Grace muttered. Now that she could see the space more clearly, she was pleased to realize that there were fewer boxes than she had feared. More than a dozen, sure, but less than 20. She crawled over the rough wooden beams to the first one. Sure enough, as she tugged at it, a long-legged creature scuttled away into a murky corner. She gritted her teeth and hefted the box over to the attic opening. "Ready?" she called down. There was no answer. "Annabelle?" Silence. "Annabelle!" she yelled. As she listened, she realized she couldn't hear Millie either. "For God's sake," she grumbled, half irritated, half worried. She turned and let her legs dangle down the hole and was about to put her weight back on the ladder when she felt two hands go tight around her ankles. She let out a cry and clung onto the rim of the opening.
"Stop kicking," Annabelle cried. "I'm trying to guide you back to the ladder, you idiot."
"Where the hell did you go?" Grace demanded, heaving herself back up into the attic space. "There was a strange noise coming from your bedroom. I was having a look, but it stopped."
"What kind of noise?"
"Sounded like scratching."
"Bloody hell, don't tell me I've got a mouse to deal with on top of everything else."
Grace poked her head out of the attic, upside down. "Is Millie all right?" Millie was munching on a biscuit, but stopped, astonished at the sight of her mother's disembodied face.
"Boo,"
Grace said, and her heart soared at Millie's smile. So she did it again and again, while Annabelle looked on, shaking her head. After a few repetitions, Millie went back to her snack.
"You're such an idiot," Annabelle said. "Are you coming down or what?"
Grace frowned at her. "You don't get off that lightly. I've got boxes to pass to you." Annabelle ran a hand over her forehead.
"For God's sake, Grace."
She looked at her perfectly manicured nails and sighed.
"Come on then."
She held out her arms for the first one. Grace pushed the box to the opening in the ceiling, but had trouble fitting it through the gap.
"I can't manage that,"
Annabelle shrieked. Grace tried to keep the exasperation from her voice.
"Yes, you can. Just step onto the ladder and balance it on the steps as you pull it down."
A moment later, she heard Annabelle cursing and the box bumping hard down the stepladder. She hoped it didn't contain a priceless antique. Grace went back across to the rest of the containers and began hauling the next one over.
"How many of these are there?"
she heard Annabelle call.
"Just a few,"
Grace lied. But then Annabelle's head popped up into the attic space. She looked around and her face fell.
"Oh, Jesus,"
she said. Grace crossed her fingers and hoped her sister wasn't about to bail on her. Annabelle glared at her, eyes narrowed, and muttered, "There better be lots of wine tonight," as her head disappeared again. Grace smiled and grabbed the box closest to her. The cardboard that had formed the lid had been cut into corners and folded down. As she pulled on it by one of the top flaps, it came open and she found herself looking at a handful of loose photos. She took them out and shone the light on them, leafing through, then stopping at one of a child sitting alone on a living room floor in the 70s, judging by the garish decor in the background. It was a young boy, his body almost side onto the camera, but his face looking directly at the lens with a surprised smile, as though someone had called his name. He was only about 3 or 4, but there was no mistaking who it was, and Grace felt a painful stab in her chest. She put the photo to the back of the group she held and focused on the next one. It was Adam again, in front of a terraced house, his arms around his mother. She wore a long dress and a headscarf, and you could see from the bony sticks of her wrists and the cavernous spaces of her collarbones that she was frail. The cancer must have been advanced by then, Grace thought. Adam would have been around 17. His face and frame were thinner than Grace had known, but other than that, his outward appearance hadn't altered much over the next 2 decades. Her heart went out to the boy in the photograph. Only a year or so after it was taken, he had been an orphan for all intents and purposes, living with his grandparents over the summer before heading off to university. Her arms felt heavy as she flicked through the rest of the pictures before she looked back at the photo of Adam and his mother. Rachel had both arms around her son, while Adam had one arm draped casually across his mother's shoulders, his body towards the camera. What had they been feeling back then? It was impossible to tell from one photo. Or was it? For despite Rachel's smile, she held Adam tightly, as though he were a ballast in the middle of a raging storm. And if she gripped on long enough, she might secure him to her. She appeared to be a woman who knew exactly what the future held, whereas Adam looked like an uncertain young teenager posing for a picture.
Grace, are you still alive up there?
She snapped out of her daydream and returned the photos to the box. She would set the personal memorabilia to one side and sort through it all at once. She didn't want to spend too many days sifting through painful reminders of things that were irrevocably gone. Chapter 6. Grace's fingers were stiff with cold as she steered Millie's stroller down the hill, with Annabelle trudging beside her. At the bottom, they crossed the small stone bridge and headed for the next incline. "This is the pub," Grace said, as they passed a two-story whitewashed building, its chimney puffing grey smoke into the frigid air. "Those are old workers' cottages, back when they had a brickworks here." She pointed towards the tumble-down buildings in a row, some distance away, and then indicated the hill ahead of them. "Meredith lives in the house up there." They could just make out high grey stone walls.
"You didn't tell me we were lunching with the lady of the manor," Annabelle said.
They began the climb towards it, Grace's arms straining from the effort as she pushed Millie ahead of her. As they drew near, the house towered above them. It was set back from the road at the end of a short gravel driveway and formed an L shape, a single-story building to their left abutting the double-story house. Four large sash windows were visible at the front, set out in a square, while trailing ivy had formed an arch over the door. A pristine burgundy four-wheel drive was parked by the entrance.
"This place is impressive,"
Annabelle said as they reached the drive.
"Why do you think they built it here, on its own?"
Before Grace could reply, a frantic barking began from inside. The door swung open and Grace found herself staring into Meredith's steely grey eyes. Grace was about to speak when a large black dog bounded out from behind Meredith and launched itself at her.
"Pippa, come here,"
Meredith commanded, and Grace watched in admiration as the dog immediately scampered back to her owner. Meredith took hold of Pippa's collar and guided her inside, then reappeared a moment later and held the door open for them. She stood straight-backed, as though she had learned to balance a pile of books on her head at a young age and had never forgotten the pose. She hadn't gone for the looser, soft perms popular with the older women Grace knew. Instead, her hair was close-cropped to her head in a pixie style, and it suited her, highlighting her bone structure, strong lines that would never change underneath the creases of her pale skin.
"Hello, Meredith," Grace said, her warm smile fading a little as Meredith studied her. Grace was sure that on previous occasions Meredith had been affable, but the woman before them exuded a polite coolness, little more.
"Don't judge her too hastily," she chided herself. "Remember, she's recently lost her husband." She felt a surge of empathy.
"Hello, Grace. It's nice to see you again,"
Meredith replied, holding out a hand and shaking with a strong, firm grip.
"This is Annabelle," Grace said, as they also shook hands.
Meredith glanced at the stroller.
"And this must be Millie."
She knelt down to look under the shade.
"Hello, little miss."
Then she straightened again.
"Well, come on in." They were shown along a hallway, past a wide staircase and a few closed doors, before they finally walked into a vast, high-ceilinged room.
Wow!
Annabel breathed, echoing Grace's reaction. In the center, a huge square table was set for lunch, silver and glassware shining atop a pristine cream tablecloth. A three-piece burgundy leather suite was arranged in one corner, the furniture all a matching gleaming mahogany. But what had really caught their attention was the vast picture window that ran from floor to ceiling on one side, framing a panoramic vista. Before them lay an endless tract of moorland, the unbroken stretch of earth drawing the eye farther and farther away in search of focus. There was little to find, except for the occasional thicket or the odd solitary tree standing sentinel. Without buildings to obscure it, the sky made up the larger part of the picture, and today it was a cloud-spattered backdrop of washed-out blue.
We had the window put in over a decade ago, when we did some major work on the house.
Meredith had followed their captivated stares.
When the heather is out at the end of summer, the whole landscape turns a royal purple. It's quite a sight. Well, come and have a seat at the table. I'm afraid I don't have a high chair.
Oh, no problem. Grace looked over at Millie. She'll be asleep for a while, I think. She took in the smell of roasting meat, and her mouth began to water. Can we do anything to help?
Annabel set a bottle of red wine in the middle of the table.
We brought this. Would you like me to pour?
She set about opening the bottle, while Grace marveled at how easily Annabel made herself at home, wherever she was.
Meredith was heading out of the room.
Thank you. I'll just go and check on lunch.
While they waited, Grace guided the stroller into a corner and took a seat at the table. It was set for four, glinting silver cutlery laid out in perfect symmetry next to side dishes that featured a delicate motif of apples and oranges. Annabel took Grace's glass and poured her a generous amount of red wine as Meredith returned from the kitchen bearing a tray of Yorkshire puddings the size of dinner plates.
In Yorkshire, we always serve the puddings first.
She used a pair of tongs to put a pudding on each of their plates.
Claire should be down in a minute.
She said she was living here at the moment?
Grace asked, as she accepted the large jug of steaming gravy Meredith held out.
Yes,
Meredith replied as she sat down.
She's been on her gap year for as long as I can remember. It seems holidaying is her occupation, and work is what she does to fill the time in between.
It's not holidaying, Mum, Claire said merrily as she entered the room. It's seeing the world, and I work while I'm away too, you know.
She came and took her place at the table.
Hi, Grace, she said, without waiting for her mother's response. And you must be Grace's sister. Annabel, is it?
Grace began eating her pudding as she listened to the introductions.
These are delicious, Meredith.
Mum's been making them since time began.
Claire looked fondly at her mother.
She's got it down to a fine art. She may not sound like a Yorkshire woman, but she definitely cooks like one.
Meredith gave her daughter a wry glance, then turned to Grace and Annabel.
My father's side is Yorkshire, through and through. But the war changed things here. He went down to London during his conscription and brought my mother back with him. She loved the countryside, but wasn't so keen on the accent. She worked hard to make sure I spoke the Queen's English, as she used to say. She did the same to all the children she taught, caused a few rifts with the locals around here.
My father built the schoolroom, Claire explained. The long building on the left as you come towards the house. There's quite a history to this place.
Did you go to the school here when you were a child? Annabel asked Meredith.
Yes, when I was small. When I got older, I went to Ogden.
And what was it like, having the school on your doorstep?
Not much fun, actually. My mother didn't want anyone to think she was favouring me, so she was horribly strict. She came down on me much harder than the other children. She wasn't averse to using a cane.
Meredith's tone didn't invite further questions, and an uneasy silence fell while everyone finished their puddings. As Grace laid down her knife and fork, her gaze was drawn to the mantelpiece opposite her, which was full of photo frames. Claire saw that something had caught her attention and twisted around to look.
"That's an old school photo of me and my sisters," she said, getting up to collect one of the larger pictures and passing it over for Grace to see.
The colours of the photograph had faded. Grace looked at the four brunettes in school uniform, their similar elfish faces, three of them with long hair, one sporting a back-combed crop with red streaks through it.
"That's me,"
Claire chuckled, leaning over and pointing to the short-haired girl.
"I thought my hairstyle was brilliant. And Mum loved it too, didn't you, Mum?"
Meredith snorted as she began collecting their plates. Annabelle moved to look closer.
"That's Veronica,"
Claire said, her finger resting on the tallest girl at the back of the group, who was posing confidently.
"The oldest and the bossiest. Always was and still is. Married to Steve, the lawyer now, with three boys. Lives a very respectable life in Octon."
She motioned to the girl next to Veronica, with wavy dark hair and a shy smile.
"Next to her is Elizabeth, Liza for short. She's a year younger than me. Moved down to Leeds 18 months ago when her husband Dan changed jobs. They've got a baby on the way. And then there's Jenny."
She pointed to a sweet-looking girl with flame-red hair sitting at the front of the group.
"She's the baby. Though she turned 30 this year, so I don't think I can say that anymore. She's only recently moved back to the area after spending 10 years working down south. She teaches at a primary school. She's crazy about kids, that one. She's had some rough luck with relationships, but she's just started seeing someone, so I'm told, which means I'm the only one left on the shelf."
"Perhaps you wouldn't be if you took out that nose stud," Meredith cut in. Claire rolled her eyes at Grace and Annabelle, and Grace warmed to her further.
"Take these plates, will you, Claire?" Meredith said, "and you can help me bring the roast through."
Claire stood up, and the two of them disappeared. While they were gone, Grace glanced across at the other photos. There were a few of Meredith's husband, including a faded one of their wedding day. She noticed photographs set on a smaller side table, too, and got up to have a closer look. They were mostly babies and toddlers, presumably Meredith's grandchildren. Soon after she sat down again, Claire and Meredith returned, Meredith bearing a platter of meat and a dish of steaming roast potatoes, while Claire carried two more bowls of assorted winter vegetables.
"This looks magnificent." Grace only wished she could cook like this.
She waited while everything was laid out, then Meredith began ladling potatoes onto her plate.
"Meredith, I owe you an enormous thank you for looking after the cottage so beautifully. I was expecting to return to a place that felt unlived in, but you've kept it so homely. I am so appreciative. I can't begin to tell you."
She stopped as Meredith began waving away her words.
"It wasn't a problem. I was glad I could be of use. It helped me to keep busy after Ted died."
Before Grace had time to express her sympathies, Meredith added,
"So, what are your plans now, Grace?"
Everyone fell silent, waiting for Grace's answer. She felt her face growing warm under their collective gaze. While her thoughts tumbled around the notion of finding Adam, she wanted to keep this to herself. She wasn't willing to be diverted by their reactions or opinions.
"I can't decide whether to head back to London or start afresh somewhere else," she said eventually.
She could tell Annabelle was listening closely as she added, "But before I can think about anything else, there's a lot to sort out in the cottage. So first of all, I need to do that."
As she finished, she tried her best to ignore the little voice that kept hounding her, yearning for a return to her former life.
"It doesn't exist anymore," she reminded herself.
You can't jump into your own shadow.
I can assure you she's quite civilized to have around,
Annabel said, a sparkle in her eye. She was always the one trying to talk me out of holding wild parties while our parents were away.
Claire smiled, but Meredith didn't, as she looked across at her daughter.
Claire briefly raised her eyebrows and returned her attention to her meal. Meredith observed Grace thoughtfully for a moment.
Well, you have done a brave thing coming back here. I didn't think you would. It's not an easy place to be with a small baby, especially in winter, what with the snow causing all sorts of chaos.
She took another bite of her lunch, leaving the comment hanging, so that Grace felt obliged to reply.
I wanted to sort through the cottage myself, not leave it to a stranger. Whatever else, I feel I owe Adam's grandparents that much, for Millie's sake.
Besides, Mum, you raised a family out here,
Claire added.
Yes, Claire, Meredith replied, but I've lived here all my life. It's different.
Grace wondered what she meant by that. Was Meredith implying that Grace might have problems adapting to life in the sleepy village? Or was there something troubling about the area itself? Because Grace was already finding the unbroken silence unnerving, the way nothing moved except at the will of the wind. But she kept telling herself that she would get used to it. Now Claire was speaking to her.
So there's been no word then about Adam.
His name hung heavily in the space between them all. Claire's face was filled with concern, and Grace noticed out of the corner of her eye that Annabel was casting her sister a worried glance.
No, Grace said, breathing deeply. The police have filed him away as a missing person, but I don't know. I can't believe that he just walked out. Oh, I'm sorry, do you mind if we don't talk about it?
She could feel her breath tightening in her chest. Annabel cut in.
So, Meredith, when you say you've lived here all your life, you surely don't mean in this house.
I do indeed, Meredith replied. All my life. My grandfather built the original house, and my parents added various extensions to make it what you see today. When my father was a young man, Roseby was very different. There was a brickworks operating a few hundred yards from here, and there were more small tenements. Most have fallen down. There are only three left, ramshackle now, you've probably seen them from the road. When the brickworks closed, everyone left. There weren't enough children to need a school, so the area went wild again. Just a few families stuck it out.
Don't you find it isolated?
Annabel asked. Meredith shrugged.
This house contains so many memories. It's never occurred to me to leave. I belong here.
Annabel glanced at Grace.
Don't judge us too hastily, Annabel, Meredith said, laying her knife and fork slowly to rest on the edges of her plate.
She interlaced her fingers and propped her chin on her hands, looking from Annabel to Grace.
I can honestly say I have never seen any place as beautiful as it is here.
Desolate, yes,
particularly in winter. But what should come alive in spring, when the lambs are born and all the birds return from their migration? And it's glorious when the heather crowns it late in the summer. This place has more life to it in one square meter than there is in a square mile of the concrete sprawl so many of you are keen to call home nowadays.
Annabel raised her hands. I think you've misunderstood. I'm a journalist. I'm instinctively curious, that's all.
But Grace knew what Annabel had been trying to convey with her eyes.
She belongs here, Grace. You don't.
There was an uncomfortable pause. Then Claire said,
Our dad was a farmer. My sisters and I grew up playing in the ruins of the workers' houses and the remains of the brickworks. It was fantastic. Like having our own little make-believe village to run around in.
Then they used them to hide in while they drank and smoked their way through their teenage years.
Meredith added, a glimmer in her eye as she glanced at her daughter.
If you say so.
Claire laughed.
Did Adam never tell you about them, Grace? He joined in for a while, in the few months he was here.
He was a big hit with us all, I can tell you.
New blood around here is extremely rare.
Meredith's eyes lingered on her daughter for a moment. Then she looked down at her plate.
Remember that he was only here for a short time, Claire. It might not have felt like a big part of his life, not in the same way you remember it.
Claire considered that.
You're probably right. At the time, I thought we were great friends, but when he left for university, I don't think I ever heard from him again. He didn't even come back for a visit, did he, Mum?
Meredith didn't reply, but Claire's comments were making Grace think back. When she'd first known Adam, he had kept in touch with his grandparents by phone, but he'd never seemed keen to make the journey up from London to see them.
It's a hell of a way,
he'd told her,
and there's nothing to do up there. They're lovely people, but we're not all that close. I only saw them now and again before Mum died, and I didn't stay with them for long before I went off to university.
But she recalled how deeply touched he had been when his grandparents made the long trip south to see him get married. So after their wedding, he'd taken Grace to visit. There hadn't been room to stay in the small cottage, so they'd booked bed and breakfast at a local farm. She remembered how much he'd enjoyed showing her around. It must have been then that his love for the area had been rekindled. While caught up in her distraction, she had missed the change of topic. She began to listen again as Meredith said,
Emma and Carl, they live next door to Grace. Didn't think they'd last when they first came, but they appear to have settled in. Their son prowls around the area, doesn't say a word to anyone. Jack lives next door to them.
Uncle Jack,
Claire cut in. My late husband's older brother. Meredith explained. Ted and Jack were originally from Skeldale, but Ted took over the farm from my dad after we were married, and Jack moved here a few years later to help out. So he's lived here for over 30 years. Never married. Keeps himself to himself now. You'll be lucky if you catch sight of him.
And the house at the top?
Annabel asked.
Another relative.
Claire chuckled.
It's so incestuous here.
Meredith cast her a withering glance.
Hardly. They're a couple about your age, perhaps a bit older. Distant cousins in the family, yes, but a few times removed. When they heard the house was vacant, they snapped it up. It seems to suit them. They've also taken on one of Pippa's siblings. Our dog Rosie had pups a few years ago, so we kept Pippa. And Holly and Bess went up the road. Rosie died last year, so now we've only got Pippa.
That's why I keep seeing black dogs everywhere, Grace said. I was worried it was some kind of omen. I even dreamed about one the other night, with bared teeth and slavering gums. Horrible.
Well now, that could have been a bar guest,
Claire said.
There's a legend of a black dog around here. Some say it's Dracula's dog, though I think it was actually Dracula himself who turned into the black beast that jumped off a ship in Whitby and raced away into the night.
Whitby is only 10 miles or so over the moors,
Meredith added. However, Claire continued, warming to her subject,
others will tell you that the bar guest appears to people just before the death of a local.
On seeing Grace's horrified face, she laughed.
Don't worry, Grace. I've lived here on and off for the best part of 32 years, and I've never seen one shred of evidence to support the stories. The folk tales. You had a nightmare, that's all.
Grace looked at Meredith for confirmation, but Meredith only gave her a stiff smile.
The moors are full of ghostly apparitions, Grace. Surely Adam told you that. We even have one of our own.
She glanced from Grace to Annabel. In here. She waved her hand around the room.
His name is Tiny Tim,
Claire added, nodding to show her mother was telling the truth.
Are you joking?
Annabel was gaping at them, like they'd announced that the house was a spaceship and liftoff was imminent.
No, not at all.
Meredith's face was solemn.
Though Tiny Tim is the girl's nickname for him, he's a little child. He's only been spotted a few times, but he gets up to mischief now and again, banging things around during the night. We've learned to live with it. And it doesn't happen all that often, hardly ever since the kids grew up.
You've got to be kidding.
Annabelle's eyes were ablaze with curiosity.
Who's seen him?
My eldest, Veronica, once said she'd seen him watching her from the end of the bed. Our youngest, Jenny, used to talk about playing with Timmy upstairs when we moved her into Liza's old bedroom. Neither girl was scared. He's pretty harmless. I think he only appears to children. As far as I know, no grown-ups have ever seen him. We just hear him now and again.
I can't tell if you're winding me up,
Annabel said after a beat. Meredith looked slightly offended.
I can assure you we're not. I've researched it. An 8-year-old boy called Timothy was killed on the road near here, back in the 20s. We're pretty sure he's the one who lives with us.
Jesus Christ!
Annabel looked at Grace.
You don't have any ghosts in the cottage, do you?
I don't think so, Grace replied. She didn't think she believed in ghosts, but she was momentarily very aware that Adam's grandmother had died there, probably in the bedroom Grace was sleeping in.
Hawthorne Cottage is one of the older dwellings, been here since before the brickworks,
Meredith told them.
But I've heard most of the local tales, and I don't remember a ghost ever being mentioned there. I think you can both rest easy.
She picked up a napkin and gave her lips a dab.
Ghosts wandering everywhere out there, though.
Claire gestured at the moors beyond the picture window. Grace saw that the corners of her mouth were turned up, and there was a flicker of amusement in her eyes.
Really?
Annabel sounded excited, and Claire's enjoyment seemed to wane a little. Grace smiled to herself. They didn't know Annabel yet. While she complained and squealed a lot, her fascination with ghoulish tales overrode any fears she might have. Annabel was more likely to organize an exorcism and then clutch at everyone throughout the event rather than run away.
There's plenty of folklore, that's for certain.
Meredith got up from her seat and held out her hand for Grace's plate.
Now, would you like some dessert?
Once Meredith had left the room, Grace stared out of the picture window, only dimly aware of Claire and Annabelle's conversation. There was nothing out there, she reassured herself, except a bare expanse of nature. Ghosts made good stories, that was all. Meredith returned bearing an apple pie, which she deftly sliced up, placing portions into bowls. She passed around a jug of cream, and they all ate heartily again. Grace's stomach was uncomfortably full, but the pie was too delicious to resist. As they ate, the only sounds were the scraping of their spoons against the bowls, and the whining of Pippa, hoping to be let into the room to join them.
So, how long are you staying, Annabel?
Meredith asked when she'd finished eating.
A couple of days,
Annabel said, a spoonful of dessert halfway towards her mouth.
Then back next week for Christmas. I've been helping Grace pull down boxes from the attic all morning,
she told them, making a face at her sister. Claire rested her wine glass against the tip of her chin.
I hope we never have to sort this place out. Nightmare.
You will when I die,
Meredith replied. Grace didn't know how to react to that, and neither did Annabel by the look of her. But Claire laughed.
I think we'll probably all die before you do, Mum.
She pushed away her empty bowl with a sigh of satisfaction and rubbed her stomach.
She's made of extremely tough northern stuff, my mother,
Claire explained to the others. Meredith smiled,
and Grace thought it was perhaps the most genuine response she'd seen from the woman all afternoon. Then Millie began to wriggle in the stroller. Without even asking, Meredith walked across, unbuckled the child, and lifted her up. Millie stiffened, then stared around the room at them all. Grace smiled at her, and Millie held her arms out to her mother, her little face crumpling as she began to cry.
"There, there,"
Meredith said, jiggling her up and down as she walked across to Grace. "No need for that." She handed Millie over. "They're so clingy at this age, aren't they? I much preferred mine as they got a bit older." Grace felt defensive, but didn't reply. Meanwhile, Millie leaned into the hollow of Grace's arm and looked around at them all from her place of safety. "Can we help you clear up?" Grace asked as she rocked Millie gently.
"Not at all," Meredith began collecting plates. "You have your hands full there. Claire and I are more than capable."
Annabel got up to help anyway, and Grace went to sit in one of the armchairs with Millie. The little girl had woken up irritable and squirmed to be free. As the women filed back in from the kitchen, Grace stood up. "I might have to take her home, Meredith. I'm sorry to rush off after such a lovely lunch."
"I understand,"
Meredith replied. She went across to a tall dresser, rummaged in a drawer, then strode over to Grace. "Here's your spare key back. Now, why don't you come again during the week? I have a portable crib I keep for the grandchildren that Millie can use. Or why don't you come at 5 when she's up? I'll make you another meal, and we can get to know one another better."
"Yes," Claire added. "Come and eat here, Grace. Don't sit in that cottage by yourself."
"Thanks," Grace said, taking the key. "That would be lovely." She was grateful for their hospitality, despite Meredith's severe manner. And next time, she could ask more about Adam's family without arousing Annabelle's suspicions. It might be a long shot, but she was buoyed by a renewed sense of purpose. That was reason enough for her to look forward to returning, just so long as Tiny Tim didn't make one of his rare appearances that night. Chapter 7. It had been dark for hours by the time they finished emptying the attic. There were now 17 boxes of various sizes stacked precariously against the banister on the upstairs landing, which Grace had to squeeze around to get to the bathroom and Millie's room. With each box added to the pile, Grace's enthusiasm for the task had diminished. There was an awful lot of work here, and she had an unwelcome feeling that she would be decluttering rather than finding the answers she craved. But now that the attic was empty, at least she wouldn't have to venture up into the roof space again. She had opened a couple of lids to discover a real mishmash of items and decided that going through everything was a job for another day. She was ready for a break and didn't want to push her luck with Annabel. Instead, they got ready for their trip to the pub. Grace put on some jeans and a jacket, while Annabel emerged in a short black dress, smart blazer, and heels. Grace thought of where they were heading and tried not to giggle. When Adam had taken her into the pub a year ago, the predominant fashion had been flat caps and pipes. They put a sleepy Millie into her stroller and then set off on the short walk down the hill. The moon was lost somewhere behind the clouds, so the only light to navigate by came from the windows of the pub. As a result, there was a faint, irregular glow over small sections of the road ahead of them, but the rest lay cloaked in heavy shadow. A strong wind lashed their faces, whipping Grace's hair in all directions, sending it in stinging slaps across her skin. As she concentrated on keeping the stroller steady, she waited for Annabelle's first complaint. It didn't take long.
"Hey, slow down. I can't go that fast in these shoes."
Grace slackened her pace. "I'd love to see you trying to get down this hill when it's frosty. You'd be on your backside in 5 seconds.
"We don't all want to live in Ugg boots, you know,"
Annabel answered,
then stumbled and gripped Grace's arm.
Bloody hell, I can hardly see the road. I feel like I'm skating over a black hole.
Stop moaning, Grace laughed, sucking in her breath against the wind, the sharpness of it making her teeth chatter. As she bent her head, a fast-moving, dark shape low to the ground caught the edge of her peripheral vision. She felt a twinge of fear in her chest and peered at the blackened space. But there was nothing moving now. The Barghest flashed into her mind, and she quickened her pace over the little stone bridge, moving at speed towards the entrance of the pub. Here we are. Annabel held open the door, a blast of warm wood smoke greeting them as Grace wheeled the stroller inside. The interior of Roseby's only drinking establishment was as quaint as Grace remembered it. The main sitting area was basically a decent-sized living room. Two men standing side by side would have taken up the whole width of the bar in the corner, but that probably didn't matter much here, as there weren't enough patrons for a queue. When Grace had been in with Adam, he'd found his grandparents on a few of the old pictures that were hung around the walls and pointed out the dartboard in the corner, saying his grandfather used to come down every Friday for a game. Tonight would probably be deemed a busy night for the elderly couple who ran the place, as they already had three customers in and as many dogs. That was what she'd seen, Grace reassured herself. Someone's dog had been nosing about outside. After all, it seemed everyone in the area owned a dog.
My round,
Annabel trilled cheerily and headed straight to the bar. As Grace unwound her scarf, she glanced up to see a man studying her from a dingy corner, but he quickly looked away. Grace had the unnerving feeling that she should recognize him. What was it with familiar faces around here? She studied his broad back as he hunched over his pint, trying to place him. But he didn't look in her direction again.
Grace?
At the sound of her name, she turned to see a middle-aged couple seated in the opposite corner by the fire, wearing matching thick green sweaters. Sitting stoically to the side of them was yet another Labrador, its black fur glowing in the firelight. The woman leapt up and came over, pulling Grace into a hug. It's good to see you, Emma, Grace said, as the woman stood back. Emma kept hold of Grace's arm. Her face had a rosy sheen to it, her highlighted blonde hair giving way to dark roots.
Grace, how are you? Any news? You know?
No, nothing. Grace felt her eyelids prickle.
Oh, Grace,
Emma said, patting her arm.
It's the strangest thing I've ever heard happen. I still don't understand it.
Annabel came up to them holding two glasses of red wine.
Unbelievable prices, she said. Are you sure those two wouldn't like to relocate somewhere nearer London?
She gestured towards the couple who owned the place, perched together on bar stools, engrossed in a quiz show on the small television set high above the bar.
Len and Joyce come with the pub,
Emma replied, grinning.
It's been a package deal for, at least half a century or more. I'm Emma. You must be Grace's sister. I think I remember you.
Emma and Carl joined in the search party last year, Grace reminded her sister. They live next door to me. Emma and Adam work together, baling hay in the summer Adam lived here.
That we did. We had a right laugh,
Emma said. She flicked her head towards their table.
Come and sit with us.
She led the way over to her husband.
Now then, Carl greeted them as they sat down. It's good to see you back, Grace.
He shook Annabel's hand.
How's your little one?
Emma asked kindly, gesturing to the stroller. She's fine, Grace replied. Her memory jogged again.
Weren't you pregnant?
Emma finished for her.
Sure was. Size of a house when you saw me last. She's nearly one now. How wonderful she'll have a little playmate next door.
Grace winced, wondering whether to explain that her plans were not long-term, but instead she asked, And how's she doing?
The baby's grand,
Carl cut in good-naturedly.
It's the teenager that's the trouble.
Close up, Carl might have been Emma's twin. Ruddy cheeks that matched his solid frame. Wholesome, without looking fat. Emma gave her husband a nudge with her elbow.
Hush, that's your free babysitter you're talking about.
True.
True, Carl agreed, taking a sip of his pint. He looked at Annabelle as he set down his glass.
So are you here for a visit?
Yes, just for the weekend,
Annabelle replied.
Then back next week for Christmas.
So where do you live? Emma asked.
London,
Annabelle answered happily, and Grace listened with a deep pang of longing as her sister launched into an enthusiastic spiel about the capital. It was all there for her if she wanted it. The busyness, the bright lights, the never-ending movement that wouldn't be halted for any reason, great or small, where she could meet her friends at restaurants down cobbled lanes and try exotic dishes for next to nothing, and where only a short tube ride separated Grace and the tiny hidden markets she adored from the huge global department stores that Annabelle lived in. She and Adam had been ice skating at Hyde Park a couple of years ago, their arms around each other as some people whizzed past and others grabbed onto them, laughing as they struggled for balance. In London, you were whipped into the cacophony of the city and how vibrant and alive that could make you feel. Here, you had no choice but to stop and let the tranquility enfold you. Perhaps she should go back to the South. Perhaps it wouldn't be so different after all. She and Millie might fit right in, as though they had never been anywhere else. But, she reminded herself, she couldn't recapture the London she had known with Adam. And she knew that if she tried to throw herself back into her old hurly-burly life for the wrong reasons, the chaos of the capital might easily overwhelm her. Besides, daydreaming was all very well, but there was unfinished business here to deal with first.
Are you ready for Christmas, Grace?
She heard Emma asking.
To be honest, I haven't thought about it too much, she admitted.
Not a bad idea, Carl said. My sisters have it planned like a military campaign, with spreadsheets and everything. I know I sound like an old git when I say this, but when I was young, we loved the carols and the tree and the stories, as well as the presents.
He caught sight of Emma playfully rolling her eyes and gave her a rueful smile.
All right, I'm off my soapbox. Come on then, our lass.
He gestured to Emma's drink.
Let's get home and kick the lad off the internet before he can cause too much damage.
Emma drained her glass, then stood up, smiling at Grace.
Just let me know if you ever need me to mind Millie, she offered. I know how hard it is without a babysitter in these parts.
Thank you so much. Grace doubted she'd have a reason to take Emma up on the offer, but it was generous nonetheless. They watched Emma and Carl leave. Then Annabelle motioned towards Grace's empty glass and asked,
Another one?
Grace glanced over at Millie to check she was still sleeping.
Come on, Grace. I need to get a bit drunk so I can spend another night in your cottage after listening to ghost stories all afternoon.
Before Grace could speak, Annabelle was already on her way to the bar. When she returned with two large glasses of wine, Grace sat back and listened to her sister talk, growing ever more tired as Annabelle became increasingly animated. She wanted to get a good sleep, aware of how much she had to do at the cottage, and was debating how she could get Annabelle to hurry up and finish her drink, when the wind wailed abruptly into the room, then the front door was sucked back with an almighty bang. Everyone's head whipped around towards the noise. A man in his early 30s stood by the door, his coat collar pulled up so high around his neck that his head appeared half buried within it. He approached the bar with a wariness that made Grace feel on edge, though his posture wasn't particularly menacing, and she couldn't imagine anyone bothering to hold up a pub that was probably lucky to get to three figures in the night's takings. As he reached the bar and spoke to the old couple seated behind it, the woman shrank back, while her husband moved slowly forward and leaned his hands on the countertop. Glowering up through bushy brows, Len said something short and sharp, but Grace was too far away to catch it.
No!
The old man shouted a second later, as he banged his hand down on the wooden bar top with a force and speed that belied his age. The younger man backed away with his hands held in the air, as if in surrender, then turned on his heel and was gone. The couple retreated to their perches, muttering to one another, until their attention was gradually pulled back to the TV, and they fell under its trance once more.
What the hell was that about?
Annabelle asked, her cheeks flushed. God knows, Grace replied, her heart hammering, one eye on the door.
Well, if that's how they deal with potential robbers here, it's most effective.
Annabelle chuckled, a little nervously to herself, as she took a big gulp of wine.
God, I never told you about Julie getting her bag snatched, right off her shoulder in the Sail and Anchor, did I? We all gave chase and the bastard obviously got scared, as he dropped it with everything still inside. One for the girls, eh? She sends her love, by the way.
Grace smiled and gave responses where required, as Annabelle continued to gossip away. Her head was somewhere else, however, remembering the man who had stood briefly by the bar. As he had turned, she had recognized Ben straight away. In the morning he would be coming to the cottage, and she knew absolutely nothing about him. Chapter 8. An hour later, Grace and Annabelle walked up the hill, their breath sending clouds of mist into the icy air. The wind had dropped, but Grace's head was swirling, both from the wine and the commotion. Away from the pub, the darkness became a blindfold. Grace's other senses began to heighten in the absence of vision. She was acutely aware of the weight of each step, the rustle of her coat as she moved, the wool of her gloves rubbing between her fingers and the padded stroller handle. A high-pitched shriek of torment suddenly tore into the night. Both women stopped, frozen, then reached out for each other.
Jesus!
Annabelle cried.
What was that?
I heard it the other night too. It's probably a bat or something.
Oh, for God's sake!
Annabelle quickened her pace.
It scared the life out of me, whatever it is. Let's get inside.
As they reached the cottage and Grace unlatched the gate, she automatically looked back down the road towards the pub. A man was standing outside, silhouetted by the light from the open door. She couldn't see his face at all, only the outline of him, but she was sure he was watching them.
Look,
she hissed at Annabelle. A moment later, the man wheeled around and they heard the distant creak and slam of the pub door.
That was odd,
Annabelle said.
Do you know who it was?
No idea. Annabelle gave a visible shudder.
This place is creepy, Grace. Why on earth did you and Adam move here?
Grace didn't want to dwell on that right now. Emma and Carl were nice enough though, weren't they?
Yes, thank goodness,
Annabelle agreed, and her mood seemed to lighten.
Right, get that little one into bed, and we'll crack open another bottle.
Grace was about to say that she was tired, but before she could speak, Annabelle gave her a look. Grace knew she wouldn't be let off easily. All right, just a glass. You do realize Millie will probably be up at dawn. By the time Grace had settled Millie into bed, Annabelle had poured the wine. Grace was about to take a sip when both of them suddenly jumped as someone banged hard on the front door.
What the hell?
Annabelle spluttered on her drink.